It always happened like this. He would look and look for the keys to Satan's hearse, and then finally he'd just give up and say, "Fine, I'll take the fucking bus." And on his way out the door, he'd see the keys. Keys show up when you reconcile yourself to the bus. Catherines appear when you start to disbelieve the world contains another Catherine. And sure enough, the eureka moment arrived just as he began to accept it would never come. He felt the thrill of it surge through him, his eyes blinking fast as he fought to remember the idea in its completeness. Lying there on his back in the sticky, thick air, the eureka moment felt like 1,000 orgasms all at once, except not as messy. "Eureka?" Hassan asked, the excitement evident in his voice. He'd been waiting for it, too. "I need to write this down," Colin said. He sat up. His head hurt like hell, but he reached into his pocket and pulled out the little notebook he kept at all times, and a number 2 pencil which was broken in the middle from his fall, but still okay. He sketched. Where X equals time, and Y equals happiness. Y equals 0, beginning of relationship, and breakup. Y negative equals breakup by M, and Y positive equals breakup by F. My relationship with K-19. He was still sketching when he heard Lindsay Lee Wells coming and opened his eyes to see her wearing a fresh t-shirt. It read, "Gut shot," and toting a first aid box with an honest-to-God Red Cross on it. She knelt beside him and pulled the t-shirt off his head slowly. And then she said, "This is going to sting." And dug into the cot with a cut with a long Q-tip soaked in what seemed to be cayenne pepper sauce. "Fug!" shouted Colin, wincing as he looked up and saw her round brown eyes blinking away sweat as she worked. "I know. I'm sorry. Okay. Done. You don't need stitches, but you're going to have a little scar, I bet. Is that okay?" "What's another scar?" he said absent-mindedly as she pulled a wide gauze bandage taut against his forehead. "I feel like somebody punched me in the brain." "Possible concussion," Lindsay noted. "What day is it? Where are you?" "It's Tuesday, and I'm in Tennessee." "Who was the junior senator from New Hampshire in 1873? Asked Hassan. "Bainbridge Wadley," answered Colin. "I don't think I have a concussion." "Is that for real?" asked Lindsay. "I mean, did you really know that?" Colin nodded slowly. "Yeah," he said. "I know all the senators. Also, that's an easy one to remember. Because I always think about how much your parents have to fucking hate you to name you Bainbridge Wadley." "Seriously," said Hassan. "I mean, you've already got the last name Wadley. That's just a bad sitch, to be a Wadley. But then you take that Wadley and you raise it to the power of Bainbridge. No wonder the poor bastard never became president." Lindsay added, "But then again, a guy named Millard Fillmore became president. No loving mother would ever make a Fillmore a Millard, either." She fell into the conversation with them so quickly and so naturally that Colin was already revising his celebrity living theorem. He always thought that people in Nowhere, Tennessee would be, well, dumber than Lindsay Lee Wells. Hassan sat down next to Colin and grabbed the notebook from him. He held it above his head to block the sun, which had darted out from behind a cloud to further bake the cracked orange dirt. Hassan only glanced at the paper before saying, "You got me all riled up, and your big revelation is that you like getting dumped. Shit, Colin, I could have told you that. In fact, I have." "Love is graphable," Colin said defensively. "Wait," Hassan looked down at the paper again and then back to Colin. "Universally? You're claiming this will work for anyone?" "Right, because relationships are so predictable, right? Well, I'm finding a way to predict them. Take any 2 people, and even if they've never met each other, the formula will show who's going to break up with whom if they ever date and approximately how long the relationship will last." "Impossible," Hassan said. "No, it's not, because you can see into the future if you have a basic understanding of how people are likely to act." Hassan's long and slow exhalation broke into a whisper. "Yeah, okay. That's interesting." Hassan could give Colin no higher compliment. Lindsay Lee Wells reached down and grabbed the notebook from Hassan. She read it slowly. Finally, she said, "What the hell is K-19? Colin put a hand down in the caked dry earth and pushed himself up. "They're what's a who," he answered. "Catherine 19. I've dated 19 girls named Catherine." Lindsay Lee Wells and Colin stared at each other dead in the eye for a very long time, until finally her smile collapsed into a gentle laugh. "What?" Colin asked. She shook her head but couldn't stop laughing. "Nothing," she said. "Let's go see the Archduke." "No, tell me," he said insistently. He didn't like secrets kept from him. Being on the outside of something annoyed him, more than it should have, really. "It's nothing, just I've only dated one boy." "Why is that funny?" Colin asked. "It's funny," she explained, "because his name was Colin." The middle of the beginning. By third grade, his failure to achieve sociological well-being had become so obvious to everyone that Colin had attended a regular school at Colman only 3 hours a day. The rest of his day was spent with his lifelong tutor, Keith Carter, who drove a Volvo with a license plate crazy. Keith was one of those guys who never grew out of his ponytail. He also maintained, or, as the case was, failed to maintain, a thick, broad moustache that extended to his lower lip when his mouth was closed, which was very rarely the case. Keith enjoyed talking, and his favourite audience was Colin Singleton. Keith was a friend of Colin's dad and a psychology professor. His interest in Colin wasn't exactly unselfish. Over the years, Keith would publish a number of articles about Colin's prodigy. Colin liked being so special that scholars would take note of him. And also, Crazy Keith was the closest thing Colin had to a best friend. Every day, Keith drove down into the city, and he and Colin went into a broom closet of an office on the floor of the Colman School. Colin pretty much got to read whatever he wanted in silence for the next 4 hours, with Keith occasionally breaking in to discuss something. And then on Fridays, they'd spend the day talking about what Colin had learned. Colin liked it a great deal better than regular school. For one thing, Keith never gave him an abdominal snowman. Crazy Keith had a daughter, Catherine, who was Colin's year in school, but 8 months older in actual life. She went to a school north of the city, but every so often, Colin's parents would have Crazy Keith and his wife and Catherine over to dinner to discuss Colin's progress and the like. Then, after those dinners, the parents would sit in the living room, laughing louder as time passed, Keith shouting that he couldn't possibly drive home, that he needed a cup of coffee after all that wine. "Your home is an Alamo for oenophiles," he'd cried. One night in November of his third grade year, after it got cold but before his mum put up the holiday decorations, Catherine came over. After dinner of lemon chicken and brown rice, Colin and Catherine went into the living room, where Colin lay across the couch and studied Latin. He had just recently learned that President Garfield, who was not even particularly noted for his intelligence, had been able to write simultaneously in Latin and Greek, Latin with his left hand and Greek with his right. Colin intended to match this feat. Catherine, a tiny blonde with both her father's ponytail and his fascination with prodigies, sat watching him quietly. Colin was aware of her, but it did not distract him, because people so often watched him while he studied, like there was some secret in his approach to academia. The secret, in truth, was that he just spent more time studying and paid more attention than everyone else. "How come you learned Latin already?" "I study hard," he answered. "Why?" she asked, coming over to sit by his feet on the couch. "I like it." "Why?" she asked. He paused for a moment, unfamiliar with the why game. He took her question seriously. "I like it because it makes me different and better, and because I'm quite good at it." "Why?" she asked, her voice singing the monosyllable, almost smiling. "Your dad says it's because I remember things better than other people on account of how I pay very close attention and care very much." "Why?" "Because it's important to know things. For an example, I just recently learned that Roman Emperor Vitellius once ate 1,000 oysters in one day, which is a very impressive act of obliguration." He used the word, he said, using a word he felt sure Catherine wouldn't know. "And it's also important that you know things, because it makes you special, and you can read books that normal people cannot read, such as Ovid's Metamorphosis, which is in Latin." "Why?" "Because he lived in Rome when they spoke and wrote Latin." "Why?" That one tripped him up. Why had Ovid lived in ancient Rome in 20 BCE, and not Chicago in 2006 CE? Would Ovid still have been Ovid if he'd have lived in America? No, he wouldn't have been, because he would have been a Native American, or possibly an American Indian, or a first person, or an indigenous person, and they did not have Latin or any other kind of written language then. So did Ovid matter because he was Ovid, or because he lived in ancient Rome? That, Colin said, is a very good question, and I will try to find out the answer for you. He said, which is what Crazy Keith said when Crazy Keith did not know the answer. Do you want to be my boyfriend? Catherine asked. Colin sat up quickly and looked at her, her bright blue eyes staring down into her lap. He would come, eventually, to call her the Great One. Catherine the First, Catherine the Magnificent. Even seated, she was notably shorter than he, and she looked quite serious and nervous, her lips pulled in tight as she looked down. Something surged through him. The nerve endings exploded into shivers on his skin. His diaphragm fluttered, and of course, it couldn't have been lust or love, and it didn't feel like. So it must have been what the kids at school called like. And he said, yes. Yes, I do. She turned to him, her face round and her cheeks full and freckled as she leaned towards him, her lips pursed, and she kissed him on the cheek. It was his first kiss, and her lips felt like it was coming the winter, cold and dry and chapped, and it occurred to Colin that the kiss didn't feel nearly as good as the sound of her asking if she could be his girlfriend.